Please support the Climate Change and Happiness podcast. See the donate page at climatechangeandhappiness.com.
Welcome to Climate Change and Happiness, an international podcast that explores the personal side of climate change, your feelings, what the crisis means to you, and how to cope and thrive. And now, your hosts, Thomas Doherty and Panu Pikkala.
Well, hello, I am Thomas Doherty.
And I am Panu Pikkala.
And welcome to Climate Change and Happiness. This is our podcast, a show for people around the globe, around the earth, around the world, who are thinking deeply about the personal side of climate change and other environmental issues. So we're focused on our emotional responses, our gut reactions, our intuitions, a lot of the things that we aren't able to talk about necessarily publicly because of how our societies run. So we're talking about climate feelings, and the larger, you know, question of this podcast is, what does it mean to be happy? What does it mean to be happy in the modern world? And so Panu is a emotions researcher and theologian and climate psychology expert, and I'm my own kind of climate psychology expert in the sense of my work in psychology and research and work in therapy. So we talk about these things, and this is our episode. You know, it's Thanksgiving time here in the United States, so it's toward the end of the year when it's time to give thanks, and Panu's celebrating the snow of the winter, and so this episode is coming out at the end of 2024 and the beginning of 2025. We're thinking about the year and lessons, and so our personal theme for this episode is what are we learning? What have we learned? What are we looking forward to? And that's something you, listener, can join us with today as we talk. So Panu, yes, tell me a little bit about what's happening for you there in Finland, and how you are, you know, orienting to the end of the year, beginning of the new year.
Thanks for asking, Thomas. Right now, it's a rainy evening, but for several days we had snow in Helsinki, and that was a great joy, and also nice to talk about that, because so often, both in my work and in this podcast, I talk about climate grief and things like snow anxiety and winter grief, but now we got to taste snow joy or snow relief and winter delight. So there was several centimeters of snow and some sunshine, so everything is bright and there's lots of light. And very close to where I'm living, there's a small chapel on the top of quite small hill, so that turns when snow comes to the snow downhill sliding hub for the neighborhood. So when I was coming from my cross-country skiing, there was like 30 kids sliding down the hill, and so it's nice to see people rejoicing and even adults walking tend to greet each other more than they usually do in the Finnish atmosphere because of the snow. So when it comes, everybody is a bit more happier, or at least almost everybody, and wanted to share that. I know, Thomas, that you also like cross-country skiing.
Yes, well, I think it's a joyful image. I mean, for people at least in the Northern Hemisphere, this, you know, the new snow often is a community event where it does bring joy to people. Snow in itself is a thing in itself. It's a part of our environment. It's part of our atmosphere. When beautiful white flakes fall down, it's generally seen as a positive thing, unless you're living in a famine or in great deprivation. Snow is typically a positive thing if you have a warm place to go to. So I think a lot of listeners can identify with that positive piece. And then I have known people that have grown up in tropical places that have never seen snow, and it's been on their life list to be in a place that's snowy. So that's that's just a neat thing. And in the before times, before climate change, it was a lot less encumbered. It was just literally there was snow, and we could trust that snow existed, and we could, if wanted to, we could travel to a place to find snow. Just like I could travel to a tropical place if I really wanted to. But of course, that's part of our odd times that we live in, that the weather is less sure and irregular and unnatural. So,
yeah,
there's, like you said, yeah, relief. There's this relief when something happens that's relatively normal.
Mm-hmm. Exactly so. And emotions about travel, and especially air travel during the climate crisis, might be a nice theme for an episode. And I know that scholars of tourism, for example, have been taking a look at that and the ambiguities and complexities. But coming back to the theme of looking back at 2024, the year started actually also with lots of snow, and I remember that atmosphere. And when I look back at the year, I noticed that I've continued to work heavily on climate emotions, and partly with a new set of visualizations. So the Climate Emotions Wheel, which came out in autumn 2023, and which we have been discussing more in an episode, we'll put a link to that at the show notes. So that's become a standard thing in the speeches and workshops I'm giving, and sometimes just as an icebreaker or to get people engaging with it, and sometimes we spend a bit more time with it. But looking back at 2024, I've realized how much that has become a part of the public work that I do. And It doesn't display even nearly all the emotions and feelings people can have in relation to climate crisis and climate action, but it shows a nice selection, and it's clearly helpful for people. And so I've been grateful for Anja Kamenets, another recent podcast guest, for leading the working group on that, and for the cooperation with Climate Mental Health Network. Also during the spring, we did this Guide to Climate Emotions booklet for that website. And I know that the wheel has been used a lot in various places, but I have much less knowledge about how much the guide has been used. So listeners, if you have been using the guide and you want to share some reflections, please do send us a message. I would be delighted to hear.
Yeah. So let me follow up on that, Pano. So you know, the climate emotions wheel is a relatively simple image of just a range of emotions, but it's taken on a life of its own. And people look to you as a leader, as some sort of, I'm not sure what, I don't know if the word is leader or expert, or how does it feel to have that energy directed toward you?
Well, thanks for asking, and I think that you have experience of that similar dynamic, and also in the podcast, I remember several discussions, for example, with Britt Wray, about the challenges when you become a noted figure in some field related to climate psychology. And because the topic is so complex that one can never be a full expert in everything which is related. So that can lead to imposter syndromes and difficult feelings and so on. And I've tried to have the attitude of being conscious of both the limitations and some of the good fruits of my own labor. And I think that's a constant balancing we need to do in our lives. And different people have different tendencies in that regard. For me, I've been learning about these frameworks which talk about the shadow, and that's a complex concept can be used in many ways, but referring to something which is not brought fully into daylight. And quite often those discussions are about negative things that people don't see in what they do or the negative impacts. But there's also with what somebody calls the golden shadow or the more benign aspects of one's shadow. And over the years I've tried to work with that, so that's actually been one personal challenge to sort of own some of that influence, even though it's never fully earned. But if one takes a look at it objectively, one may see that there's also one's own work included in this complex set of impacts. But how do you feel about those things, Thomas? Of course, you're a therapist with many years of experience and you've done academic work and so on. So I've got the feeling that you're able to trust that competence and experience when appearing in the public sphere as an expert in these matters.
Well, it's interesting that you say what you talk about, Pani, because I think what people get out of your work and what you get out of your work are different, because they're pulling things that are new to them and you're talking about stuff that's not new to you at all. And your I think that's a interesting topic to think about. When we see an expert, I try to remind myself that so-called experts are just people. They're really just humans. They're just people. They have to eat, they have to sleep, they have families. They're just normal people. They happen to have taken on some notoriety, and we give them notoriety, but what I find interesting about their work is often not what they find interesting about it. I find something they wrote 20 years ago and I'm all attached to it, and they've moved on to many other things or are thinking differently. So that's a good thing for listeners to think about. You know, when you see any expert, you're picking up some piece of their writing or some idea from them, but they might have, you know, a whole nother agenda. Oh, you know, just a different learning piece that's more important for them personally, but we're picking up stuff, you know, that they've shared. One just basic idea that I've come across, I'm trying to think about this idea of what have I learned this year, or what did I learn in 2024 that I want to kind of take with me into 2025. This idea of what I call a behavioral Sabbath, you know, the Sabbath day, the seventh day, as this biblical connotation of creation and things like that. And of course, there's many different ways to think about the Sabbath. Every seven years, let your land be fallow so it can regenerate for growing crops, or every 7 years an academic can get time off, et cetera, et cetera. Or every 7 days we take a break from our work or from technology or commerce. So I've been thinking about this. I like the idea of the Sabbath because it has all these different resonances with people, and it brings in a little bit of the positive side of religion and spirituality, I think. And it's philosophically interesting. But, you know, the idea of a Sabbath in the sense of taking time to rest, it's important to take time to rest. And then the other piece is, you know, to look upon our work and call it good, you know, to in reference to the Bible, you know, take time just to look back at what we've been doing and just give ourselves some appreciation. So that's just a basic a basic insight. I've been thinking about that. So I call it a behavioral Sabbath because it's kind of sounds interesting from a psychological perspective, but it does literally mean like we're taking all this action all the time. And if we don't ever take a behavioral Sabbath, we're just always we're just on a wheel, like a assembly line or some sort of, you know, constant action, and never resting. And it's important to think about, in the United States, many people's nervous systems are hijacked by news and events and the election, and they're in constant state of stress and need of action. And of course, climate concerns make people want to act, which is true. And it's a natural and normal and noble thing to take action. But if we never take a rest, we never get any perspective. So that's kind of an idea that I've been thinking about.
That's a nice thought and framing the concept of Sabbath is of course familiar for me from studies in theology and partly also from the environmental theology applications, where some folks have been advocating for less consumption-based Sundays in the Western world, and then partly extending that to the Jubilee year ideas in the Old Testament of letting the land rest and letting slaves go free. And some people think that there's been idealism in those verses, and perhaps it never was exactly so in real history. But anyway, this idea that we also need rest resonates strongly with me. And what you say reminds me of a great phrase I read from the autobiography of Bono, the U2 singer. He heard it somewhere, I don't remember the original source, but it goes like this: don't just glance at your life, stare at what you got.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
So that was a spiritual lesson for me this autumn. Don't just glance at your life, stare at what you got.
Love it. Thank you, Bono. I appreciate that. That must be in his recent book you're referencing there. Yeah, that remind. It's also it has the ring of one of the U2 lyrics. I'm gonna put that in my list of quotes. Don't just glance at your life, stare at what you've got. But yeah, take rest. You know, listeners, this idea of the Sabbath, the seven, every 7 hours, every 7 days, every 7 months, every 7 years, et cetera, et cetera. You know, take time to take a rest and look upon your work and call it good. Whatever it is, whatever you've been doing, it's not perfect. You know, another kind of insight is there's this term, the wisdom of no retreat, which comes out of Buddhism. You know, the idea that, you know, we're in life, we can't go anywhere. We need to accept things as they are and do the best we can. There's another quote that I think about with that. It actually comes from the Korean War, at least the story as I know it comes from the Korean War, when the U.S. military was fighting in Korea, and some military forces were surrounded, and the general or the leader said, you know, and people said, you can't retreat. And he said, retreat, hell, I'm just attacking in the other direction. That's kind of one of my quotes of life here lately, you know, because, you know, we're surrounded by issues, and every direction has got something. And what I think about that is, like, there's many directions to take, and it's got a kind of neat sense, like, I mean, the military thing is heavy, obviously, but it's also like, you know, we can work on our inner life. We can work on the outer life. We can do personal ideas, personal actions. We do public actions. We can do practical things. We can do symbolic things. That we can just be, or we can do. You know, so there's all these directions. You know, so the image is like a circle. Like, we're in the center of a circle, and like, rather than this linear kind of arrow line that we have, where our life is just this constant, like, you know, forward. It's really more like, We can quote unquote attack in any direction, because the line is imaginary anyway. We're just in the middle of everything, and so that's something I've been thinking about.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's thought provoking and links with many things in my mind. And also during the year, I went back to Miriam Greenspan's great book, Healing Through the Dark Emotions, that I've spoken about many times in the history of this podcast. And she formulates tools for coping and for engaging with emotions. There's like contextualization, for example, but there's also way of action and way of non-action. And that's of course linked to several spiritual traditions also. And sometimes non-action can be a very important action. And I'm not just playing with words here. And often my climate action has been engagement with, if not non-action, then at least forms of retreat and coping and engagement with emotions. So it's not frontline activity. And you, Thomas, have a very nice exercise for people to think about their position in relation to frontlines or backlines. And we seem to be running into military metaphors mm-hmm. here. But in Art of Warfare books, it's also well explicated that a wise commander knows when to retreat, and the longer one goes on, one can't just fight things head on, but we need the wisdom of retreat. Mm-hmm. Also, a very other kind of topic which this resonates is the Japanese slow dance method called Buto, or psychosomatic exploration method. And via recommendations of several of my friends and colleagues, I started experimenting with that in January. So that's been actually a quite important thing for me this year, because I don't have a long history of doing any kind of dance. And we have a Japanese Buto artist who is also a yogi in Helsinki called Ken Mai, who has developed his own style of facilitating and teaching Buto as exploration of both light and darkness. Hmm. And so there's both the movement forward and movement backward. So that's the connection with the retreat metaphor. But anyway, when looking back at 2024 embodied methods, and including this Buto, has been one important thing for me.
So you're actually doing Buto of Buto theater yourself, or Buto methods yourself?
Yeah, we have 2-hour session every Friday. So I haven't gone to any public performances yet. After all, I only started in January, but so there's usually something like 15-16 of us at a meeting, and it's a really interesting psychologically also the way those sessions are led. So there's lots of relaxation via movement at first, and different kinds of explorations via movement and letting go of the conscious mind and that sort of thing.
Well, that's fascinating. Yeah, Buto theater, BU. I think it's Butoh.
Yep.
is a for listeners, that's a Japanese art form, theater form. It's very unique. It's something you would have to see in action. I've seen some Buto theater performances, but it's a very, very, very stylized version of theater that I can't do justice, but you'd have to kind of watch it and see it. But point being, Pano, you have your own growing edges and things that you're experimenting with, mm-hmm. That do channel that emotion wheel in various interesting ways. Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah, and it's good to go really outside once your ordinary box at times. So but yeah. How about you, Thomas? I know that you've been doing this drumming thing, for example. So these quite holistic and embodied things have been part.
Well,
of
yeah. So that speaks to the private life of our hobbies and our pastimes. And yeah, one of the things that I do is do drumming. And this past year I joined up with the Portland Brazilian samba drumming group here, and it's a very active group that's both a performance group but also has a large public aspect where members of the general public can come and play with them. And listeners might know samba music in Brazil is a very huge thing in Brazilian culture, with these bands of hundreds of drummers and other instruments and dancers. And of course it's associated with the carnival. It's incredibly big in Brazil. It's hard to describe how big it is, but samba drumming is very fast and very active. It's very joyous. It's wild sounding, and it's of course musical, and it makes people want to move and dance. And it's very, it's impossible not to move your body and to enjoy it. It's a very joyous. And so, you know, I've been able to march in a parade with this group, and when you come down the road, everybody hears you coming and everybody smiles, and it just brings joy to everyone. So it's just really special. But practically, it's really hard to do the drumming is very hard to do because it's very fast and it's very precise. It's not easy to do. So as a like any kind of music, playing any kind of music, whatever instrument you want to imagine, the playing of it can be challenging to learn, especially if you didn't grow up like you grew up cross-country skiing, as we talked about. So, you know, from a child, it's natural for you to ski, but if someone has never cross-country skied in the snow and they try as an adult, it seems very alien. And so similar with Butoh theater or samba music, people in Brazil have been playing these instruments since they were children. And so when we in America try to pick up this instrument, it's just very difficult to get the same sound. But it's super fun.
Yeah, really, really, really glad to hear about that. And vivid pictures of those moments come to mind when listening to you and people drawing from Adrian Marais Brown, for example, have quite explicitly recommended integration of those kinds of visceral, holistic, embodied joint actions and activities in times of the climate crisis. So it feels really good to lose oneself together with others in music or dance.
Exactly. And it speaks to this, one of the shadow sides, as you talked about, of climate work, is that everything has to be grim, everything has to be official, and we have to adopt a kind of a serious, a grieving persona, which takes away from the joy of life. And so that's the whole, I mean, I think people don't realize that the feelings wheel is a wheel. So you're supposed to be on all of the levels of the feelings. If you're only in one section, you're not doing the wheel. So, yeah. So joy, you know, movement, happiness, fun, easygoing. That's part of it. That's part of the thing I've been working on all year is this manuscript where it's like, what is ethical happiness in this whole podcast? Like, when can we give ourselves permission to have fun and to relax and to have joy? Yeah, it's a really tough question because all the content seems to move away from true joy to some sort of, you know, consumeristic, you know, and consumerism is just a sorry kind of, you know, substitute for true joy.
Yeah, that reminds me of this great poem, A Brief for the Defense by Jack Gilbert, which starts with sorrow everywhere and very vivid portrayals of suffering in the world. But really the main point in the poem is that we must have the stubbornness to accept our gladness in the ruthless furnace of this world. So that spoke to me heavily when I was doing my first Eco Anxiety and Hope book in Finnish. We must have the stubbornness to accept our gladness in the ruthless furnace of this world. That's Jack Gilbert in A Brief for the Defense.
Yeah, you'll have to send me the link and we'll put that in our show notes. Yeah, so defensive, you know, so listeners, you can think about that, you know, as you a big takeaway from this past year and going into the new year is a defense of happiness and a defense of gladness, a defense of joy in the face of all the different, you know, dangers and sad realities of life. And you know, the easiest place that I find to get this working is when I think about children and when I think about young people, you know, because as adults, sometimes we say we can be tough enough to sit with all this hard work, but children, you know, they deserve that permission to have joy, and I think that's a kind of a universal agreement of humans. I think that children should be allowed to have their play and their fun and their innocence, and not have that taken away from them. I don't care whether you're a conservative or a progressive or what country you live in. So that's something to think about. It doesn't require you to be a parent either. It just requires you to something about the young. Or just in general, when you come upon people having a joyful event, you know, it's okay to give them permission to do that, and I think that's normal too.
Yeah, so that's a nice theme to wrap things up in the time of Thanksgiving and near the new year when this episode will come out. So gratitude practices and joy in the midst of sorrowful times and all that.
I want to thank you, Panu, for all your time this year and sticking with the podcast and in your evenings, you're like giving over your late evenings and time with your family to do the podcast. And thank all the listeners for some there. I know there's a few listeners that listen to a lot of these episodes, and I really, really do see you and appreciate you and messages that we get and stories that I hear that people have been listening to this podcast. So I appreciate you, and I'm thankful for you giving of your time. And well, Panu, what do you have anything? You're closing out your evening there in Finland. Anything for the rest of your day, or what are you looking forward to in the next little bit?
Well, as is quite traditional in our sessions, I'm looking forward for the evening sauna, and now the snow is melting because of the rain, so it's a time for sort of determination also in waiting for more at some part of the year, but really looking forward to spending time with the family and relaxing. And you have the day ahead of you, Thomas, so what's on your mind?
Well, you know, I have a day of writing, and I have to deliver a chapter for my manuscript hopefully today. We're getting ready for our Thanksgiving holiday, and I actually have conferences with my daughter's teachers for her school. Teacher conferences as a parent, that's one thing the parents have to do, so that's something I'll do a little later as well. So it's a good professional and family day today. All right, Panu, we'll have a great evening, and listeners, take care of yourselves and be well, and we wish you the best for the new year. And Panu and everyone, take care, be well.
Be well.
The Climate Change and Happiness podcast is a self-funded volunteer effort. Please support us so we can keep bringing you messages of coping and thriving. See the donate page at climatechangeandhappiness.com.